Success doesn't happen overnight. It's built day by day, decade after decade, by individuals dedicated to something greater than themselves, working together to create a legacy dedicated to fulfilling our shared mission to provide best-in-class experiences that inspire joy. Purpose is guiding us toward the future and building a thriving organization that will endure for generations.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending upon where in the world you are and what time of the day you're listening to this episode of Talking the Blues. George and Andy, hello to you both.
Good day.
Hi, Dan.
Are you well on this fine summer's evening?
Well, fine summer evening. It is. I'm in the south of France, and it's 12 degrees. We're in woolies and socks, and we've lit the fire. So, personally, I'm in a great suit, but fine summer evening? No, it's like
springboard. You need to be in sunny downtown leafy Cheshire, then, don't you?
Absolutely, mate. Absolutely. Inundated with election.
Yeah, well, it's been cracking the flags today.
Wow.
Well, I suppose this is the most English of all podcasts, isn't it? When we just talk about the weather. So how's the weather with you, Andy? No, right, let's stop that. You can probably tell that we're in a slightly chipper mood than we have been for quite some time, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, what's happening at Everton? First of all, a takeover now looks as if it's going to happen. And we've also had some transfer activity, and it's only the 22nd of June.
What's the transfer activity?
He signed a midfielder from Aston Villa.
Who?
His name's Tim.
And I've got a surname.
Well, he has, but I'm not sure how you pronounce it.
Is he 12 or something?
No. I don't know what shirt number he's wearing.
Has he ever played for Aston Villa?
Yeah.
All right.
But it's Irogan Noonan or something. I'm not sure. Not sure how you pronounce it. That's why I'm just going to refer to him as Tim.
No, okay. You don't use the G, apparently.
There's no G in Tim.
Silly, silly joke. Very silly.
You started it.
So his name is Tim Arobunam.
Okay.
And he's got a great
middle. Do we assume that, I mean, did we pay money for this boy?
Yeah, we paid 10 million for him. He's
all right.
Nine or 10 million, sorry.
Do you assume that this means that the door is now open for Onana to go for three or four times that amount of money?
Well, certainly the door's now open for people to leave, yeah. And it looks actually as if, my brain's just gone completely dead. It looks as if one of your favourite young players, George, is moving in the opposite direction.
Dobbin.
Lewis
Dobbin.
Yeah, Lewis Dobbin is going to move to Aston Villa in the opposite direction.
Oh, no. Oh, dear. Well, good for him. That's a good move for him.
Very good move for him. And a lot of this is to do with the profitability and sustainability rules, because both Aston Villa and Everton, and actually many other clubs, find themselves in where they have to do some player trading before the end of the financial year, which is in just over a week's time. And this is one of the ways of getting around the regulations. You're effectively swapping players in order to create a profit which you can then apply to profitability and sustainability. I don't think that's the only reason why we're buying this kid. He's 21 years old, but certainly it's got a little bit to do with it. And by all accounts, he's quite an exciting prospect, Andy.
I can't really comment on whether he's an exciting prospect or not. All I know about him is his name's Tim.
Right.
Without your expert analysis here.
Yeah. This is why people tune in in their thousands to listen to us.
Tell us about Tim. Wow.
All right, so his second name that also is quite difficult is Amika. So it's Timothy Amika Arobunum. There you
cool.
go. Otherwise,
I'm just going to be working on the chants now.
So he's 21. He first appeared in Villa's first team in 2022. And then he went on loan to QPR, where he made 32 appearances and scored 2 goals. He's a midfielder. And he's played for England under 19s and England under 20s so far in his career.
Wow, great stuff.
Right.
Well, welcome, Tim.
Yeah. So, as I say, takeover is underway and a transfer all before the 22nd of June.
Mm.
Didn't I got a flash on my phone saying that Ben Godfrey was moving. Have you heard that one?
Yeah, there's a very good chance that Ben Godfrey will be moving.
And is there any strength in the rumours of DCL wanting away to Newcastle or I saw before that there's interest from West Ham and Brentford for him.
I think there's a distinct possibility, Andy, that he will go. And I think it's worth considering for a few minutes, because whilst, you know, he's obviously not the most prolific of goal scorers, and he has got a questionable fitness record.
Yeah.
As we've identified in the past, I'm sure many others have done as well. Everton look a completely different side when he's in the team as against when he's not in the team.
I'll say.
And the question will be, if he does go, and I can, you know, to a degree I can understand why he might, what do we do to replace him? Because we will need to replace him. It's not as if we've got 3 or 4 number nines waiting to take his place, is it?
No.
We've got
Beto and Chimiti.
And we're selling Dobbin.
And if Dobbin is going down the road to Aston Villa, then that leaves us very light up front. No disrespect to Chimiti and Beto, but I don't personally see either of them as the immediate and correct replacement for DCL.
No, I agree with you. I think let's be frank about this. And you know, it's somewhat unusual for us to be talking in such detail about footballers. But Beto is not going to make it as a number nine in the Premier League, I don't think.
Well, if you compare him to DCL. He's agricultural. He's very much, I'm not quite sure how to phrase this. He's not a finesse player, let's put it like that. I think DCL has got way more finesse in his game than Beto has. If we are going to go with Beto, then he's going to need even more of the service that he needs than perhaps DCL did. DCL works harder for my money. So we're going to have to, you know, if Beto is going to be the number nine, then somehow we've got to find a way to give him the ball in such a way that he can actually make use of it. Because I don't see him doing a great deal of chasing around the way DCL has been prepared to do.
No, I mean, I'll go back to the point I made a couple of minutes ago, that we're a completely different side without DCL in the side. And, you know, for me, talked about it quite a bit. I think certainly talked about it with both of you when we've not been on the podcast. The shape of our side looks so much better when DCL is there. And, you know, it's not just the fact that he's an old-fashioned target man. He's much more than that, because he basically leads the line across the whole of the pitch, doesn't he? He's not he doesn't just run sort of down the central channel. He can go left and right. And he appears to be out of all of the options, out of the three options that are available to Deitch, he appears to be the only one that can link up the midfield, or link up a long ball as a defence with the rest of the side. And how many times when DCL hasn't played, and does it just look as if, you know, we've got, there's that massive gap between whoever it is that's playing up front and midfield in particular. And we talked about it, but I'm sure everybody who's watched most of Everton's games last season, and particularly the season before, because DCL played a lot more games last season than he did in the previous season. That's, you know, it becomes a really big problem for Everton, that we cannot, A, we don't have the shape, and B, we can't link up play, even to the extent that we did last season.
There's always Neil Mope, of course.
Whilst you're on that subject, can I raise the nightmare that Holgate will be coming back?
Well, yeah, because he was only on loan at Sheffield United last season.
So he'll be back, and Godfrey will be going.
Well, certainly seems as though Godfrey's heading for the exit door. So if you need four players at the back, that's going to leave us Tarkowski, Branthwaite, Keane, and Holgate.
And you think Branthwaite's going to stay?
I hope so.
Well, so do I, Andy. But
if we are going to lose him, I don't think we need to poll our listeners to know where we don't want him to go. And certainly not for the knockdown price that the cheeky bleeders are trying to get him for.
I would have replied to that by going, double it, or don't even pick up the phone again.
Well, exactly. They start talking about realistic prices. You know, it's in the press that they're talking about Everton need to be realistic about the price tag that they're putting on Jared Branthwaite. Well, given the ridiculous price tags that they've paid in the past for players, they can do one. It's 200 million. Take it or leave it, pal. If you don't like it, Mr. Ratcliffe, on your bike, go and find somebody else. 200 million might be a bit too much, but I don't, quite honestly, ever. There's no way Jared Branthwaite should be allowed to go to Old Trafford for anything less than six figures, in my opinion. Ideally, not to go there at all. If we have to sell him, I'd far rather him go abroad. He doesn't want to go.
The one advantage, Andy, of possibly selling DCL is that it reduces the need to sell Branthwaite.
Yes. Yeah, if we can raise money through other exits, that gives us more chance of retaining Branthwaite. And right now, he's much more of a future for Everton Football Club than just about anybody else in the squad.
I would agree, and yeah, I mean, you know, I think we talked about it a couple of weeks ago. When, you know, certainly I was told by an agent friend of mine that he wants to stay at the club.
Right.
Obviously, time will tell. But if we do sell DCL, and it looks like Onana's going to go, then perhaps the need to sell Branthwaite is significantly reduced. Particularly with the deal that we're about to do with Aston Villa as well, where you know, if Dobbin does go for a similar fee to what this guy Tim's coming in for, then there isn't a fact, there probably isn't a financial, and given you know, what we're going to talk about in a while about the incoming new owners, there probably isn't a financial reason to sell him. So then it becomes a question of whether he wants to go, whether his agent wants to go, and who it is that wants to take him. And I think if it's only United that are on the table in terms of offering him an alternative, then first of all, derisory bid that Everton are clearly not going to accept. And secondly, you know, if Branthwaite, and we talked about this before, he's like, seems like a sensible kid. He seems like a kid that knows the direction that he wants to go in and has got a plan. Surely that plan doesn't feature Manchester United in its in their current state.
He would be certifiable to go there.
he would be ill advised to go there for sure.
Yeah. So
especially as they'd offer us Harry Maguire.
I would, you know, famous last words and all that. I find it very difficult to believe that he ends up being, you know, playing at Old Trafford next season, apart from when we go there.
Yeah. Let's stick to that for a hope. That sounds good.
Yeah. And, you know.
Can we just add that I'd like him to score there as well?
Twice. The winner.
Yeah, so notwithstanding what we just said about DCL, if the choice was between selling DCL to Newcastle or selling Branthwaite to a other club, not Manchester United, you'd have to say that for all the great service that DCL has given us, and you know, I don't suppose anybody will ever forget that goal against Crystal Palace in particular.
Mm-hmm.
He would probably go with most fans' blessing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair to say.
And, you know, there has to be a question mark, and this is not a judgment about him at all. There has to be a question mark as to his willingness to stay as well, given that he, you know, he hasn't yet signed a new contract and he's only got a year left on that contract. And he might, notwithstanding anything that might happen in the next few weeks about Everton's ownership, he might just be taking the view that at his age, he needs to go to a club where there's a greater prospect of silverware.
Yeah.
And international football, because Kane's not going to go on forever, is he?
No. And he's not, you know, he's 27 now. He's not as if he's like still in the first full, you know, flush of youth. This is the time in his career, isn't it? Probably the next 5 years, 27 to 32, say, yeah, where you'd expect him to. These are his peak years.
It's those are the years where he secures his financial future, isn't it?
And there's always that consideration.
I think that's pretty much secure. But yeah, I get your point. Yeah. The other thing is, of course, he's not. You know, he hasn't played for England since 2021.
No.
So, and I'm pretty sure he would love to get back, you know, with an England shirt on. Is he going to achieve that whilst playing for Everton?
I think that depends on the kind of service he gets.
The type of service he gets at Everton or the type of service he gets with England?
Anywhere. The type of service he gets. He needs service, doesn't he? He's a centre forward. He can't do everything. He is able to move across the line, as we said, and play on the flanks if he has to. But as he proved in that short period under Ancelotti, that if he channels his play through the centre and he's given good service, he can and will score. So from his perspective, I suggest he needs to look at wherever he's going to go or whether he's going to stay, who is going to provide him with the kind of service to score goals for whichever club it is and to give him a chance of forcing his way back into the national side.
Yeah, it's painful to remember that when Ancelotti was saying to him, you know, stay in front of the goals, please, Everton's forward line included James Rodriguez and Richarlison.
Yes.
And was, you know, must have been a bit scary to face.
Yeah, I mean, he's played, when did he join us? 2016-17. So he's played 8 years in the Premier League for Everton. I think, if I'm correct, he's only got into double figures twice.
Right.
Which would be 2019-20 and 2020-21. And again, I think he scored 16 in 2021, and I think he scored 13 in terms of the Premier League in 19-20. 2021 was his best year because I think in total he scored 21 goals,
right,
across all competitions. But since then he's come nowhere near that. I mean, this last season, I sound like I've swallowed a book of statistics here, but I was reading about it a couple of days ago. I think he played 39 games for Everton last season, but he only scored. I mean, including other competitions, yeah?
Right.
He only scored 8 goals.
Mm.
Well, who scored more?
But Everton?
Yeah.
No, he was our top scorer, wasn't he?
Yeah. McNeil and Decore and... You know, this is an endless problem. It's probably, you know, if he was listening, he might go, this is a bit unfair to pick on me. Nobody's scoring goals. Nobody's getting any supply with that team.
Not picking on him. I'm just talking about him. You know, notwithstanding all of that, I'll go back to the point that Everton are a far better side when he's in it.
Couldn't agree more.
Home and away. Particularly away.
Mm.
And the big question mark then is, well, who do we replace him with? Going back to the first point that we made.
Yeah.
And I guess a lot of that is going to depend upon, A, what other transfer business we do in terms of sales, and B, and I think it will be the case that the ownership situation is resolved. But it must be one hell of a headache for Sean Dyche.
Mm-hmm.
If he's thinking, this guy's going.
I'm sure Dyche has been weighing all this up for a long, long time, Paul. He must have known towards the back end of last season that there was going to, whichever way the ownership and thing went, there was going to have to be changes in the squad. I suspect he's been toying with all the variables for a number of weeks. Hopefully, you know, if DCL is going to go, we get a decent price. And then hopefully, whatever they are able to spend on a replacement, assuming that they do go for a replacement and we don't just go with Beto, Chimiti and Mope, that they recruit solidly.
Well, I suppose it could be Fahad Mashiri's leaving gift. He did promise us a number 9.
Yeah, but I think Mashiri was probably talking about a bus.
He's parked the number 9 bus.
Yeah.
That's very good, Andy, actually.
Mope's still on our books. We're still paying his wages.
Yeah,
he's only on loan at Brentford.
I think he's got another year left on his contract, hasn't he? From memory.
Yeah, I think he has. Oof.
But he's not the answer, is he? I mean,
I wasn't suggesting he is the answer. I'm just saying that, regrettably, he has to come into the equation because he's still on our book. So we either need to move him on.
Surely we're going to sell him back to Brentford, aren't we?
Well, you would have thought so. He seems happy at Brentford. In fact, he more or less said it in quite blunt terms that he was far happier at Brentford than he'd ever been at Everton. He felt like he'd come home and that kind of statement. So, you know, if he doesn't want to be here, and in all honesty, I doubt there's more than a handful of Evertonians who genuinely want him to stay, then, you know, do right by the player, do right by the club, and move him on for whatever we can get for him. The problem, of course, is how much did we pay for him in the first place, and how much are we going to lose on him?
Although much of that, to use George's favourite word, will have already been...
Yeah, I knew that was coming.
It will have been amortised.
Sorry for beating you to it, George, but I just thought I'd get the line in before you.
You have to. I don't know what it means.
I don't think many people at Everton over the years have known what it means neither, but that's a different point. So, what else can I say? There has to be other transfer business done by the club anyway, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it can't just be this, but moving Walpay back to Brentford or indeed anywhere else has to be part of the plan, surely, for this summer. There's no scenario where he comes back and plays for Everton, surely.
Is Chimiti our player or is he on loan?
No, he's our player.
Right. I think he'll start with him. But he needs support because he's not physically capable of... if DCL is going, I got a sneaky feeling that Deitch's preference would be to go with Chimiti, who's a better player than better. Got more options, got more things, but he doesn't have the weight to hold the ball up. And at the moment, you know, the way we're playing, which is pretty much long ball football, you know... It suited us that DCL was playing so well towards the end of the season. I'm not sure that boy can do
But then, I agree with your assessment that Chimiti by himself can't take that role on. But then we have to change our formation because we need, as you say, we'd need effectively what would be an old fashioned number 10.
Yeah. And inside forward is what they used to call them.
Yeah.
How old are you?
Younger than you.
Yeah. Well, is Decorey got one more year in his contract?
I didn't get to D in the statistics book. I just got to C.
Robin, you know. Yeah, because you know that's the formation he's been playing. That Decorey plays alongside whoever the striker is.
Yeah, it would require him to just occupy that advanced position all the time, and maybe that's the solution. You know,
well, that would certainly help Chimiti.
Yeah, and you know if Garner Gay's fit for the whole season, and we've got James Garner sitting behind them, then maybe that's what they do.
We'll see. 4-2-4.
You just say 4-2-4.
4-4-2 would be a start.
I did say 4-2-4, yeah. I was dreaming of being our dealers.
Yeah.
Well, if it's 4-2-4, the last season at Goodison is going to be one hell of a season.
Yeah, fantastic ride.
We certainly won't be the team that score the least and concede the least goals in the or near least goals in the Premier League. Wow. Yeah, interesting stuff. So what else is new?
Well, I've been watching the Euros have been occupying my mind, especially as I went round to a neighbour's the other night, poor man, and sort of he offered to let me watch England on his telly. My God, we ended up the evening ended up with me going, Philly, I promise you, never again. Never will I put you through that, even though I bought the beers round and everything. Oh, God almighty. What a mess they are. But it's just fascinating because the tournaments, I never kind of thought of this before, but what happens in a tournament is the winning team or the most successful teams grow into themselves as they sort out what their best formation is. And, Andy and I were just saying before you press the button, Paul, that I think he's got to pick Gordon tomorrow night against Slovenia because they're the weakest team left in the competition that we're going to play. And after that, it's no time to experiment with giving Gordon what effectively is a big debut. But he has to do something about the fact that Trippier means that the team is completely unbalanced, with no disrespect to Trippier, who's a proper pro. But, he can't do anything on the left-hand side, so he needs somebody who can. And and the hole in the midfield where Calvin Phillips isn't and Henderson isn't and nobody else is. All the options he's got, that rat Gallagher, Conor Gallagher and Palmer and Maimo to partner Rice, don't provide any muscle at all. And it was interesting watching the Denmark match that every time Bellingham got the ball, three big blokes descended on him. Big Danish midfield players, not Eriksen, the rest of them. And we don't have that kind of muscle in the England team. So having watched them twice now, I'm afraid my confidence in the fact that they were supposedly favourites for this tournament is waning.
For a team that's supposed to have the most... wasn't it described as like the most potent attacking force in the competition?
It has. But if you can't supply it, it has. The England feet, when the squad was announced, I remember texting both of you and saying, this is a squad that cries out for attack, attack, attack. But that's not Southgate's mentality at all. But it is, you're right. It's a cracking forward line full of all sorts of gifts. But, he doesn't play like that, does he?
It would be a great side for Martinez to manage.
Speaking of Martinez, his Portugal are currently 3-0 up against Turkey.
Wow.
Has Ronaldo scored?
No. Fernandes right. has. Bernardo Silva and OG, and then Ronaldo very nicely gifted Bruno Fernandes a tap-in.
That's a pretty potent forward line too.
Is it ever? Is it ever?
Mm.
So do we think Martinez is going to walk away with the competition? Become a winner?
No. Spain have got to be the favourites.
Have they?
Yeah.
Not Germany, Andy?
I think Germany got the perfect start, didn't they, by tonking the jocks. I think Germany have flattered to deceive in the last couple of years, but they're on home soil, so you could never count Germany out. But just on what we've seen so far, if you were a betting man, you'd probably put a couple of quid on Spain,
right?
But there's been some terrific games, and there's been a couple of letdown games. I mean, I watched France and Netherlands last night, and whilst it wasn't as boring as the England game against Denmark, it was nowhere near the classic it could and perhaps should have been. Whereas the Poland-Austria game earlier in the day was a belter. End-to-end, both teams going for it. I really enjoyed that game. You know, there has been some good games. I mean, it's ironically as well, just going back to last night in France and Netherlands, you know, if you look at that disallowed goal and you've got an English referee and an English guy on VAR, it took the longest of all the VAR reviews in this tournament so far, and they made the complete wrong decision. That was a goal. There's no way that goalie was being impeded at all. It's just nonsense. But there you go. Well done, Anthony Taylor. You've cost yourself a final, because if England don't get there, you might have been in with a chance of being the ref. Not now, pal.
Are you watching any of it, Paul?
Just little tiny little bits of it.
Right.
Probably no more than 15 minutes in total, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. You have missed some decent games, seriously. But if you know, I mean, I said beforehand I wasn't really bothered, because for me it's club over country. But I've tried to watch the games that I've seen, absolutely as a neutral, obviously, just to be entertained, because at the end of the day, it's an entertainment business, and by and large, I've been entertained. There's been a couple of no-nos, like the England-Denmark game was boring. And last night I found France and Netherlands, less than entertaining from my perspective. But some of the others have been excellent.
Yeah, the stuff I've read about it, that sounds like the case. And I think a couple of things. Well, first of all, the Euros are normally a better tournament than the World Cup. There's a better quality of football played, isn't there? Notwithstanding the fact that I haven't watched it, but there's normally a better. And the other thing that, you know, just listening to a couple of podcasts and things, the atmosphere at each of the grounds has been fantastic, hasn't it?
Yeah. That's noticeable.
Yeah, the crowd's been great. There was a wonderful
comment from the mayor of Cologne who thanked all the Scottish fans and said they'd all be welcome back any time they wanted to come. That's brilliant. And apart from, you know, one outburst of boxing from the England fans, they've been really well behaved too. So that's all excellent, yeah.
Yeah, maybe football's turned a corner in that sense. I was thinking also that maybe the cost of watching international football in tournaments is so high that it. It becomes self-selecting in terms of the people that can go.
Yeah.
Although that doesn't seem to apply to the Scots. But then I suppose if you only go to a tournament once every 25 years, you can save up.
You save up, yeah.
Ooh, that's still out the belt, wasn't it?
Well, I was going to make a comment about the Dutch earlier, and I thought, well, I don't want to lose our 17 regular Dutch listeners.
But hang the 12 jocks.
Sort of, yeah. Okay. Well, look, the big news and the news that's dominated certainly this podcast, many podcasts, certainly my thinking for an awful long time is the ownership of Everton Football Club. And right. at long last, and actually, although Andy and George, you won't be aware of this because you haven't heard it yet, but the opening music, it's not music really, it's just a commentary I took from a video produced by the Freakin group, where it's one of those typical sort of corporate videos, but some of the words in it I thought were just very appropriate. Mm. It seems that we have on our hands a group, a guy in terms of Dan Freakin, who ticks all of the boxes in terms of what we've ever asked for.
Good.
Good.
And I, you know, I'm hugely positive about it. I think the way that we have eventually got to these guys deserves several books to be written, but we got to these guys in the end, or these guys have got to us, and I think they're going to do. I think they're going to do a fantastic job for us. In terms of, if you look at their other businesses, the values that they bring to any business that they own. If you look at their experiences in Rome, difficult to begin with, but they've got a grip of the club, and first of all, they've got a grip of the business, sorted out many of the business problems, and you know they've been successful on the pitch as well, haven't they? With one European, was it the Europa League?
Yeah.
And they missed out in a final. Was it this year? Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then they sacked Jose, didn't they?
Yeah. I just think we, and it's quite difficult. Shouldn't be difficult to say this. I just think we're on the cusp of maybe actually returning to being the club that we've always wanted us to be.
Well, just getting back to being professionally run and sensibly run would be a major leg up on where we've been in recent years.
There's a whole generation of Everton fans, Andy, who've no idea what that means.
No, I know. I know.
I think we've got to be realistic, and we've got to start from the point that the club is still in a difficult position and will be in a difficult position financially still for some time, although the way that they seem to be structuring the deal is that they're not going to be as reliant upon debt as perhaps others might have been, certainly 777 and certainly Fahad Moshiri, up to the point where he sold. They're going to put a lot of permanent capital into the business, which is good because it will reduce the interest costs that we have to pay. Mm-hmm. But it's the overall perception that these are people who really care about their own brand, they care about their own businesses, and they care about their customers. Some of the language that was used in this, there's about a 4-minute video, which actually I'll put a link into.
It's a good video.
On the website. It. Yeah, I think you saw it as well, George, and you were impressed with the slickness of it. But, being change makers, best in class experiences, just using their language, they inspire joy and purpose. Isn't that what we want from our football club?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Astro, who many people will know, the Everton supporter from the US, who does those great videos. He made some great comments about the fact that Dan Friedman, in particular, his the fact that he's an aircraft pilot, the fact that he flies old planes, World War II planes, demonstrates attention to detail, demonstrates risk management. But also demonstrates a love for history and a love for culture and a recognition of, in terms of Spitfire, for example, what are iconic objects.
Mm.
You can't get much more iconic, really, than the Spitfire, can you? And if you apply those standards to Everton Football Club, I think there's a fantastic opportunity for somebody to get to understand and realise what the club has, what the club can offer, and what the club has failed to sell for many, many years. And I've had some really interesting conversations with people in the last couple of days about Everton and about its relationship with the city of Liverpool and the people of Liverpool, and the relationship between the city of Liverpool and Everton fans. And somebody said to me earlier today, when you look at Everton Football Club and you look at the city of Liverpool, Everton don't have to sell the fact that they're an integral part of the city. everybody at the club, everybody within the fan base understands the relationship between the City of Liverpool and Everton Football Club. And it's quite interesting, the guy who mentioned it is quite a bright guy, and he said, contrast that to Liverpool and Liverpool's messaging, where they try and force the image of the City upon their own club, the club that carries their name. And he just made the point that there's a massive difference between the two. And if the new owners can identify that and recognise it, based on what they've done elsewhere in terms of looking after cultural assets, there's an enormous opportunity to demonstrate to the world what we all know as Evertonians in terms of Everton's position.
The new stadium leading the way.
And then you've got the new stadium leading the way. Exactly. The other interesting point, and can't really mention his name because he didn't want me to mention his name, but the other interesting point that was made.
Is he called Tim?
No, it wasn't. His middle name might have been Tim, I don't know. He said, but these new guys coming in, everybody gets like a bit of a honeymoon period when new owners, new manager, whatever. Not that we're necessarily getting a new manager, I don't mean that, but you know, there's a honeymoon period. He said, but think about it in this way. He said, these guys are coming in, they're going to come in with fresh ideas, fresh marketing, they're going to listen to people, they're going to engage with people probably, hopefully, if they're as good as they appear to be. But he said, think of it from this point of view, and it is a unique set of circumstances. Their first season as owners of Everton Football Club will be Everton's last season at Goodison Park. And mm-hmm. on the basis that we are not fighting relegation for much of the season, if indeed at any point in the season, let's assume that we just operate as a mid-table club. It gives the new owners a wonderful honeymoon period where everybody can enjoy the experience, the last season's experience at Goodison, and that they will benefit from that, because assuming that we're okay on the pitch, there is going to be an enormous goodwill factor about the football club next season that is unique, because you know nobody's play well. It's wrong to say nobody's played in one ground. In fact, it might be the case that nobody's played in one ground as long as Everton have played at Goodison. I'd have to go away and check that. But anyway, regardless of that fact, it is what it's going to be 133 years. If my maths is right, yes, it's going to be 133 years, and it's just such an amazing, and I hope the club gets this right, and I think they might. It's just going to be an amazing opportunity to celebrate the football club, and therefore an amazing opportunity for the new owners to be part of that celebration and to mm-hmm. get to know about the club and get to learn about the club. And most importantly, get to learn about the fans and the fans' relationship with the city. And so that's great. That's like the first year. And then normally by the end of the first year, sort of the honeymoon period starts to disappear and people start saying, well, actually, you know, what progress have you made on the pitch? What's our transfer activity? Have you improved our commercial performance, et cetera, et cetera? But actually then, and again, the Friedkins have got a unique opportunity here, because in the second year, we're going into a brand new stadium. And that is an entirely different and new story. And again, it's something that they, one, should be able to take advantage of, and two, it gives them another buffer in terms of them getting their feet under the table and really addressing the underlying issues that we, you know, have spoken about for years. And if you think about it, and I hadn't thought about it in this way, just the conversation I had earlier, the timing of this, although we all would have liked it to have happened much earlier. I mean, we all would have liked not to have gone through like the last 9-10 months that we've gone through in terms of 777 and other people potentially buying the club. He just said, if you think about it from a timing point of view, that actually isn't a better time for a new owner to come into a football club as there is now. Sorry, that's quite a long speech, but I think
you're right. That's absolutely right. They've got a lot of momentum and a lot of free, easy publicity and a lot of good visuals. And and you're absolutely right. They should be taking on, getting on board with the Echo and the whole of the Liverpool media. I'm sure they will. But they can't resist it, really.
But it should be a global story to sell.
Yeah.
It really is the opportunity to turn around and say that there aren't that many club sides. There aren't that many football clubs with such a storied history as Everton Football Club. And I know it's not all about history. It can't all be about history. It has to be about the future as well. But here we've got the opportunity to, on the one hand, celebrate our history and to explain to the world what we're about, what is the culture of Everton Football Club, but also under new ownership and going into a new stadium, actually sell the vision for the future. I'm massively enthusiastic about the opportunity. And if you think about it, that's one of the reasons, one of many reasons, but one of the reasons why 777 getting hold of the club was entirely the wrong decision, because they would never have been able to exploit this. Even if they found the money somehow to buy the club, they would never have been able to exploit this amazing opportunity. And if you look at what the Friedkins have done with their own businesses, this is exactly the type of stuff that they do with their own businesses. And then Dan Friedkin with his interest in, airplanes and stuff. I just think it's a really amazing opportunity for them, but it's also a really amazing opportunity for the football club. And I just hope that they take some time in thinking about what they're going to do, and they take on board as much opinion, advice and engagement with the fans in order to fully understand and then fully exploit the opportunity.
100%.
Yep. Can't argue any of that.
So that's like all the nice, warm, fluffy stuff. Although it's obviously much more than that, because it's critical to our future. And it may be a way of just rebooting this. It may be a way of creating a shortcut from where we are competitively to where we might be, say, in 2 or 3 years' time, or maybe 3, 4 years' time, whenever. But they've also got to address address the financial issues. And they've started to do that already. One of the conditions of getting exclusivity was that they had to repay MSP, which they've done, and they had to provide funding for Lango Rourke, which they've done. And actually it got quite tight in the end, because the exclusivity was not granted until Thursday, and it was Friday by which we had to pay Lango Rourke quite a significant payment. So it couldn't really have gone any later than it did. And that's not necessarily down to the Friedkins. It's just the way it happened. But it's done now. They're already committed. They're already £200 million into the football club. They have to go through the due diligence process. They have to go through the directors and owners test. But once they're through that...
How long is all that going to take?
I think it'll be much shorter than the 777 proposed thing was. I think 4 to 6 weeks. I think 4 weeks is probably optimistic, but 6 weeks is realistic.
Right, let's cut to the chase. Have we seen the back of Farhad Moshiri?
Not yet, because he's still the owner of the football club. But he's agreed exclusivity terms with a group that have got the means to buy the club, and are not going to have any problems at all passing the directors.
Is he going to bugger about and change? Is he going to bugger about and change his mind?
I don't think he can now. Now he's signed the exclusivity agreement, and this is why it was so important. He signed this agreement. He's now committed to selling the club to Dan Friedkin, in the same way that he was committed to selling the club to 777, but then 777 thankfully couldn't conclude the transaction. He's now committed to Dan Friedkin. Why would the Friedkin group have put £200 million into the club this week if they weren't given that assurance or didn't have that legal assurance?
Yeah. No, I'm just, you know, there are certain aspects of this whole story that have got on my tits, and Farhad Moshiri is one of them. And if we made a talk in the Blues rule that when they finally buy the thing, we never ever mention the bastard's name again, that would be just fine by me, because all I get off vibes from him is negativity, failure, disappointment, incompetence. He's a pain in the arse.
Well, that's a nice way of inviting him on to explain himself.
Is he coming? Sit down, love. Sorry, have a magnum.
He's had plenty of invites in the past. I'm pretty sure he's not going to take one now.
I'm pretty sure he's not going to take one now either. He can invite us round to his house.
Live from sunny Monaco. Talking
it's not
blues.
Far from me, Andy. I'll just drive down, mate. I bought my tape recorder and three magnums. One for you, one for the missus.
It's probably a bit warmer in Monaco as well, George.
It couldn't be any colder, Paul. It's absolutely ludicrous.
Make sure you take an icebox with you for your magnums. We don't want any more melted magnums.
Yeah.
I thought I'd just go down to Marseille and get him off the boat.
Yeah, I'll make sure we leave a container for you. Anyway, that's a reference that nobody else will understand, but let's not go over there. So yeah, I think we're in the position that we always hoped we would be in. Yeah. Obviously, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. And they now have to demonstrate that they can do with Everton what they've started to do with Roma, and you know what they've done elsewhere in their other businesses, which have all been hugely successful.
We bought a Toyota.
George is already ahead of the game in being a lead
sponsoring
brand sponsor.
Freaking.
You should send them an invoice, George, for
I'll send them the next service charge, yeah.
Yeah, I think you should. You tell them you've been driving around with their brand for years and not received a penny from them. in fact, you've had to pay for the privilege.
It is a privilege. They're good cars.
They are good cars.
They are good cars.
So yeah, I'm not sure there's much more to say at this point, really, on them, other than there is this amazing opportunity, and the timing of it in terms of moving the stadium, and also where we are as a football club, assuming that they've and they have got the finances, assuming that they sort out the structure of the club, bring in, and this is the other thing, of course, that they did at Roma, that they just brought in a brand new management team, and none of this nonsense about keeping on previous board members and stuff. They brought in their own people, and
they did a Sheikh Mansour.
Yes, they had a plan, and they didn't get it quite right to begin with, I think we talked about this last week, and they found it quite difficult to begin with, partly because they didn't have a local presence, and that's maybe something that they need to look at at Everton. Although I have to say, I doubt it will include Andy Bell or George Downing. If people are thinking that's the direction that this conversation is heading in, I don't think it is. But it's all there in front of us, and we are so. I think they have to prove themselves, yeah. But we are so fortunate to be in the position that we're in, given where we might have been.
Mm. Great,
and good. That is. I think that's about as good as it gets at the moment, given all of the difficulties that we've been through. And, you know, we don't need to repeat them. We've repeated them ad nauseum for years on end as to why we've got into this position. But at last, there seems like an opportunity and a plan. Well, we haven't seen the plan yet, but there seems like an opportunity, and these seem like the right people to bring a plan forward to get us back to somewhere near, if not at, where we want to be.
Fingers crossed as ever.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So...
And with Tim in midfield.
With Tim in midfield, yeah.
Last time we had a Tim in midfield, we had a decent Tim in midfield. If he can score as many goals as the previous Tim, he'll be all right.
I think that Tim was a one-off.
Yeah, probably.
But it would be great if he could.
Yeah.
Anyway, there we are. In the absence of any other news, that's today's Talking the Blues.
Whoopee.
Fair enough.
Yeah. George, Andy, thank you very much. Thank Pleasure. You to everybody for listening. Appreciate all the comments from last week. And we look forward to much brighter times ahead.
Come on, you Blues.
Thanks, George. Thanks, Andy.
Pleasure.